Bilam is commissioned by Balak to curse the Jewish people. And in his invitation to come and curse the Jewish people, Balak says the following to Bilam. Ki yodati, because I know, es asher tivorech yivorach, whoever you bless is blessed, v'asher ta'or you are, and whoever you curse is cursed. So the Mefarshim ask a very simple question. Why did Balak hire Bilam to curse the Jewish people? If Bilam had the power to give blessings also, then why didn't he hire him to bless him? Instead of cursing the Jewish people, hire him to give him a blessing. The Sfarno asks this question, and he gives the following answer. He says, in fact, Bilam had no power to give blessings. Bilam only had a power of curse. He will see what his power came from, where that was. He had an eye in hara. He had a bad eye, a destructive eye. Very negative person. Destructive person. But Balak thought it would be totally disrespectful and dishonorable to Bilam to say, I know you can curse. I know you're a negative person. So out of deference to Bilam's honor, he added in what he knew wasn't true. He said, I know you can bless people and you can curse people, even though he knew he couldn't bless anybody. He only had the power of curse. But out of deference to Bilam's honor, he didn't want to say you're a totally negative person. What can we learn from that? That people who are overly critical, people who are negative people, it is not a praise to them. It is very dishonorable to them to be such kind of people. If it was dishonorable to Bilam to be called a negative person, how much more so to regular people?
Why God created such a person?
That's for a different shear. Another idea I was thinking is that we see from here another rule, and that is, it's much easier to curse people than to bless them. It's much easier to be negative than to be positive. And therefore, it was easier to ask Bilam to curse the Jewish people than to bless him. Because being positive and doing positive things is much more difficult. It's very easy to destroy and to be negative and to criticize. It's very difficult to be positive and to strengthen people or whatever. Chazal say that Bilam had only one eye. Shesum ha'ayim. Person with one eye. And that one eye had a very destructive power. Very critical eye. He had almost a physical power, or spiritual power, of giving people a bad eye and destroying what he saw. Meaning he had a very critical eye. What's the concept of bracha and the concept of klala? How does it work? So bracha comes from the word brecha, which means a stream, a well, constantly increasing. Bracha means to increase something. You find something positive and you increase it, strengthen it. That's the power of bracha, right? Giving an increase, intensifying a positive attribute, something positive about something. And a klala is the opposite. You find something negative and you try to make it even more weak. You find a weakness and you intensify that weakness. Therefore, the word klala comes from the word kal, light. You take something that is a weakness, kal, easy, light, and you increase that weakness and amplify it and intensify it. And that's what it says, that Bilam knew the times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry, the moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry in the day, which means the following. God's anger is on things that are imperfect. And since the world was created, even though the Rabbanu Shem created basically a world that has the potential to be perfect, but since the chait of Adam and Chava, I don't like to call it the original sin because that smacks from a different religion, but the sin of Adam and Chava, everything in this world is a mixture of good and bad. There's no total good and no total bad. Everything is a mixture. And you can find the good points in anything, or you can find the negative points in anything. And Bilam had the ability, and what God's anger is on the things that are negative in this world. And everything has negative things. Klal Yisrael also has negative things. So there's times in the day when the Ribbono Shel Olam focuses on those negative things that agree, that exist in the world, and that stirs up his anger, kibiyachol. If you know how to take that anger and direct it and focus it, then you can destroy with that anger. Bilam knew how to look and find the negative things, amplify them, focus them, and direct them almost as a ray, a destructive ray to cause destruction. When a person sees with both eyes, so he sees in three dimensions, you see the whole picture. You see the good points, you see the negative points, and you're able to balance things out. When you only look with one eye, you see things in two dimensions. You don't see the whole picture, and you only see things in a very shallow way, and then you can concentrate and focus in on the negative and forget about the positive completely. To bring this out, I want to mention a Gemara that you're familiar with, I think, and we've spoken about in the past, but I want to mention it again. The Gemara says that Reb Shimon Bar Yochai spoke harshly against the Roman government, and because of that they wanted to kill him, and he went and hid in a cave with his son Reb Elezer for 12 years. And the Ribbono Shel Olam took care of their needs in that cave. He made a carob tree grow outside the cave, and a well that was for drinking water. And all they did for 12 years was most of the time learn Torah and buried themselves in the ground so their clothing didn't wear out. And when they were learning Torah, they were buried up till their neck in sand learning. And when they had a daven, they put on their clothing and they davened from time to time. That's all they did. Daven and learn for 12 years. Finally, an angel came and told them that the government that had wanted to kill them is no longer in power. They can come out of the cave. They come out of the cave and they see people planting, plowing, harvesting, being involved in earthly, material, transient things. And wherever they looked, they burnt up the ground. They were very, very critical of what was going on. How could people, right, waste time doing these earthly things and not be involved in things that are eternal? They spent 12 years. They didn't have to be involved in all these things. How could people waste their time in this world? Go sit and learn. Go daven. Right? What are you wasting your time with material things? Have bitachon. The Ribbono Shel Olam take care of you. So a bas kol, a heavenly voice resounded, go back in the cave. I didn't let you out to destroy my world. Get back in the cave. No. They went back in the cave for another year. After the year, they come out of the cave. And still, every place where Belezer looks is getting burnt up. He also, again, very critical of these people who are wasting their time with material things and not being involved in eternal things. However, now Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is able to look and heal and correct the damage that Reb Elezer is doing. Two things bothered me, and that's it. It's the end of the story for our purposes. Two things bothered me about this Gemara. First of all, if you would ask me, why were these two people so critical? Why, wherever they looked, their look burnt up the area around them of people being involved in material, transient things? So I would say very simply, because for 12 years they were separated from society, living on such a high level, right, that they couldn't take people on a lower level. So if that's the case, what's it going to help sending them back to the cave for another year? Just going to compound the problem. Send them to Miami for a year. That will solve the problem. Don't send them to what's it called? Don't send them to back into the cave. What's sending them back into the cave going to help? Second question is, okay, after a year, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai seemed to have learned his lesson. And he's able now to look at things and not destroy them and not burn them up. But Reb Elezer is still burning things up. So why isn't he sent back into the cave for another year? Why is he let out now? He didn't change. So I learned from that two things. First thing I learned from that is that which people are too critical, too negative, constantly see the negative and burning everything up, not tolerant, is not because they learned too much. It's because they didn't learn enough. The more a person learns, and the higher level he's on, the more he can see things in three dimensions, see the whole picture, see the negative, but also see the positive, be able to be done the kafshlus, and that's in the end what happened. They said, sure, these people are involved in material, earthly, transient things, but they're doing it l'shem shamayim. They're doing it, what's it called, for the sake of Torah, and for the sake of Torah observance. They're not doing this for the sake of this world. They're using this world for the sake of the next world. They saw people running to be Mechabed Shabbos, and they understood that 6 days you work, and the purpose is for the world to come. So they were able to see the negative, but in a positive light. They're able to see the whole picture. That's what Dom Lechatzchus is. Take the negative and put it into a perspective where you can understand that even the negative things can have a positive perspective and a positive context. So, because people are not fully learned, that's why they can be critical and intolerant. But the more a person knows and the broader his vision is, the more tolerant he can be, and the more less critical he can be, the more he can take in the whole picture and see the negative and also see the positive. Usually, youngsters who haven't yet learned, who are immature, are very, very critical. Very critical. And as they get older, they get more mellow. And that's the second lesson. A person has to have two eyes. Bilam only had one eye, and that eye was a negative, critical eye, and that was wrong. That was a terrible thing. But the other way is also no good. If you only have one eye, and that eye is a rosy, everything is fine, you're okay, I'm okay, everything is okay, that's also no good. Because then things that need to be corrected in this world aren't corrected. And nothing can ever grow, and nothing can ever be made right from wrong. There are wrongs, and there are things to be critical of in this world. So you need a critical eye too. So as long as you have both eyes, you have the eye that's critical, but then you have the other eye to put it into perspective and to put it into context and to see how to have constructive criticism, that's perfect. But if you only have criticism, or you only have that everything is fine, then it's no good. Therefore, the first time they went out of the cave and both of them were critical, they had it back in the cave. Once they came out, and now they had a partnership. The youngster was critical. You need critical people. You need hotheads in the world also to be able to point out the things that need to be corrected. And usually it's the youngsters, right, who have that. And then you need the older people to be able to take a look at what the youngsters are burning up with their criticism and negativism or whatever, and to put it into a positive, constructive context. When you have both of them can stay out of the cave. When only it's one way, either total criticism or the absence of criticism, then it is it's negative. And that's why the Chafetz Chaim points out that the Sedra of Balak is a very unique Sedra. There's only two other Sedras in the Torah like it. Why the other ones are like that is not for now. But Balak has no paragraphs. Usually in the Torah, if you look in a Chumash, you'll see every once in a while there's a samach or a pei, a big samach or a pei at the end of a sentence. That signifies where there are paragraphs in the Torah. Parshios. In fact, that's what a parsha is. A parsha is a paragraph. Parsha is not parshas hashavua, right? The sedra is the parshios hashavua. It is the various paragraphs that make up a sedra each week. But each parsha is a few sentences, sometimes more, until there's a paragraph. And there are two kinds of paragraphs. There's a parsha psucha and a parsha stuma, where with a paragraph like we have, it ends and there's a blank till the end of the line, and the next line starts at the beginning of the next line. Or there's a space between words, and the new paragraph starts on the same line as the old one with a space of 9 letters separating it. In any case, those are the paragraphs. Parshas, the Sedra of Balak, has no parshios. Throughout the entire prophecy of Bilam, it's all run on. There are no paragraphs. From the beginning of the Sedra till the Maisa of Shittim, the end, which has nothing to do anymore with Bilam and Balak, it's all one run-on thing. There's no paragraphs. So the Chafetz Chaim points out, why was that? He says it for his reason. We're going to use it a little bit differently. He says that Bilam had the power to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. He had the same level of prophecy. Yet Bilam ended up being a Bilam, and Moshe Rabbeinu ended up being a Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? What was the difference between them? Says the Chafetz Chaim, what do the parshios in the Torah signify? Why are there paragraphs? Says the Gemara, the paragraphs are there to tell us when HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu about that topic and told him, now think about it, review it, and then we'll go on. So the parshios represent where Moshe Rabbeinu had time to think and to review what the Rabban Hashem told him. Moshe Rabbeinu thought about what the Rabban Hashem told him and reviewed it. Therefore, he became a Moshe Rabbeinu. Bilam also had the same prophecy, but he never thought and he never reviewed. He just went on without thinking. You can be on the level of a Moshe Rabbeinu. If you don't think, you're going to end up to be a Bilam. So says the Chofetz Chaim. I think there's a different idea here too. Same principle, just we can learn two other things from it. One is that in order to give a bracha, Bilam in the end gave brachas. He was called to give a klala, but he had to give a bracha. In order to be able to give a bracha or a klala, and we said that both are important. Sometimes you have to capitalize on the negative, and sometimes you have to see the positive, but you have to put them in one unit to be able to take the negative and transform it into something constructive criticism. In order to do that, you have to think. People who don't think can easily pick out negative things and are constantly complaining, constantly criticizing. It doesn't take too much thought to criticize. You don't have to be a very smart person to criticize. Very, very foolish people criticize all the time. It doesn't take any big chachma to be a critic. It takes a big chachma to be able to take the criticism and see it in the proper light, and to be done lekat schus, and to put it into a positive framework and a constructive framework, that takes a lot of thought. So the first thing is that the reason Bilam was able to be so critical, he couldn't think too much. You don't think too much, you're going to be able to see all the negative things in the world and point out everybody's faults and all the things that are wrong, but you'll never come to anything positive from it if you don't think. So not thinking leads people to be very critical. And secondly, in order to be able to really give a bracha or a klala, you have to see the whole picture. You can't see it piecemeal. If you only see piecemeal, if you look at people only in a piecemeal way, you only see this is what they did, that's what they did, this is what they are, then you can see everybody's no good. If you look at their totality, it says, have you done this? Kol ha'adam lekatzchus. So some say it means judge all people favorably, but that's not true. You're not supposed to judge all people favorably, because there are people who, Taka, you should judge not favorably, who are a shoyim, wicked people. Adolf Hitler, you weren't supposed to judge favorably. You're supposed to judge him unfavorably. Right? And it applies across the board. There are people who you're supposed to give the benefit of the doubt, even where it is illogical, because they're known to be great tzaddikim. If somebody saw Rav Moshe Feinstein walk into McDonald's in America, not a kosher McDonald's, okay? So walk into McDonald's, and so if you saw a regular person walk into McDonald's, right, who's from, you should assume he's going in to get a drink, to go to the bathroom, to ask directions. That's logical. That's reasonable. But if you see a regular person walk into McDonald's and order a cheeseburger and sit down and eat it, then you don't have to give him the benefit of the doubt. You can assume he's doing something wrong. But if you see Rav Moshe Feinstein walk into McDonald's, sit down, order a cheeseburger, and eat it, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he probably has some dangerous, life-threatening situation, and he has to eat immediately now, and it's 100% okay what he's doing. Even though it seems illogical, but lemaise, it's just as illogical to assume that Rav Moshe Feinstein's eating a cheeseburger just like this. So lemaise, therefore, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. A regular person in that situation, you don't give the benefit of the doubt. So it can't mean judge all people favorably, because it's not true. There are people that are wicked people that you're never supposed to give the benefit of the doubt. You're always supposed to look at them negatively. Because if you give them the benefit of the doubt, then you're going to be affected and influenced by these wicked people and think that they're okay. So it's not across the board to give people the benefit of the doubt. So it can't mean have you done this kol ha'adam, judge all people, but what it means is, have they done is kol ha'adam. Look at the totality of the person. Don't look at them piecemeal. Look at their entirety. Look what they did yesterday. Look what they're doing tomorrow. Don't only look at the thing they're doing right now. Don't only look at the character flaw that you hone in on. Look at their total personality. They have good things about them too. Put the negative into the perspective and the context of the positive also. There's always positive, there's always negative. Look with both eyes. Look with the positive eye, look with the negative eye, and then you don't see two different things. The eyes then focus together and you see three dimensions. You see things in a much broader scale. That's what it means, have they done. Therefore, the Sedra that deals with curses and blessings is run on in order to tell me, don't look at things piecemeal. Don't see things paragraph by paragraph. Look at the whole picture together. Don't stop in the middle. Look at the whole picture. You'll come out with something positive. And Chazal tell us that Bilam, aside from being a very negative and critical person, and had one eye that could only see criticism or whatever, Bilam also had a very bad character. The midos of Bilam were the following. A ayin ra, he had a bad eye. Again, he was only saw the critical, the negative. Nefesh rechava, he was a very big baltaiva. He was very, had a tremendous desire, what's the word I'm looking for? A lustful person. And ruach gavoa, and he was a balgai, he was very haughty. And the truth is, if you think about it, if you put all those things together, that's what you get: people who are critical, who are negative, who are constantly complaining about everyone and everything. They put all those things together. They have the bad eye, meaning that they're innately critical and negative people. They don't bother to think too much, and therefore without thinking you can find negative in anything. Secondly, they are people who are very lustful. And usually people are critical of things and complain about things because they don't think they're getting their share. They don't think that they're getting what's coming to them. Somebody else is eating the pie that belongs to them. And therefore they're critical or whatever. Or because they don't think they're getting enough covet. Somebody else is taking away their covet. So it's either covet or sometimes money and other kinds of lusts that people have, that they think that other people are encroaching on their territory, either honor-wise or money-wise or any other kind of lust, and that's what leads people to be negative people. There's a very interesting Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says the following, to see how negative being negative is. The Ibn Ezra asked the following question: why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bother to go to such lengths to stop Bilam from cursing the Jewish people? Who cares? God can't control that if Bilam can say whatever he wants, and that's going to make any, if God doesn't want it to happen, it's not going to happen. There are other answers to this question. But you know, when I was a kid, we used to say, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me, right? So why didn't Klal Yisrael and the Rabban Yisrael say the same thing? Bilam, say whatever you want. If God doesn't want it to have any effect, it's not going to have any effect. So why did God force him to bless the Jewish people and not to curse them? Let him curse them all he wants and ignore it and finished. What could he do if that wasn't the will of God? So why did the Rabban Yisrael go to such lengths to stop Bilam from cursing the Jewish people and to force him to bless them? So the Ibn Ezra says the following. There are other answers. Shredas has an answer, but the Ibn Ezra says the following. He said God knew that in the near future 24,000 Jews were going to die because of the sin of Baal Peor, because they were immoral with the daughters of Midian and Moab, and because of that sin 24,000 Jews died. God did not want people to think that the reason 24,000 Jews died is because Bilam cursed them. And therefore, he didn't let Bilam curse the Jewish people, that no one should make the mistake later that when all these Jews died, they died because of a curse. Now, I don't know, but if you think about it, I think it would be better for the Jewish people that people thought they died because of the curse of Bilam than they died because they were immoral. Let's have a cover-up. Instead of the world knowing that 24,000 Jews were immoral and deserved to die because of a terrible sin, they died because this Bilam, what's it called, gave them a curse. So that would cover up their sin. Wouldn't that be better? What's Ibn Ezra saying? God didn't want people to think that they died because of the curse of Bilam. Better that they should know they died because they were immoral. What do you see from that? Yes. In order to curse, we said, you need to find an intrinsic flaw that you can intensify and increase. If people thought that these 24,000 Jews died because of Bilam's curse, that means that he found an intrinsic flaw in the Jewish people, and that's a terrible thing. If the people thought they died because of a sin they did, that means they did something wrong, and they were punished for what they did. But it doesn't mean they were something wrong. There's a very big difference between being something bad or doing something bad. One thing identifies who you are, and the other one identifies what you do. The Jewish people can do terrible things, and we've done it throughout our history. And that's why we're going to start tonight, again, the 3 weeks. Okay? But we're not terrible people. Ultimately, deep down, we're very good people. And we have tremendous, tremendous potential. Otherwise, the Rabban Shem would have gotten rid of us long ago, like he did many, many other nations. But he's put up with us for thousands of years in the hope that one day we're going to do tshuva, and one day Mashiach is going to come, and we have tremendous potential. Because if the Rabban Shem thought there's no hope, then he would have destroyed us. We end Eicha like that. If you really are disgusted with us and you really think we're such terrible people, then you got too angry with us. You should have destroyed us on the spot. Why'd you put up with us for 2,000 years? It must be that you think we have potential and you're waiting for the time that will bring out that potential. And therefore it's worth all the suffering or whatever, because there's hope. When you have a child that you feel there's absolutely no hope for him, so you leave him alone. Why bother disciplining him? But a child, you know that there's a hope that he'll accept the discipline. That kind of child, you discipline. Es asher yehav Hashem yochiach. God gives mussar, and he rebukes the ones that he loves because he sees the potential they have. So if people would have thought that the Jewish people were punished because of a curse of Bilam, it means that Bilam found an intrinsic flaw in them, which he then could increase or whatever. And that means there's something wrong with the Jewish people. If people think that they died because of what they did something immoral, fine. People can do terrible things. That doesn't make them terrible people. It makes them think people who did terrible things will get punished for it. So, think that I said this to my Kehillah also, and I'm saying it here too, and I think maybe I'll say it a few other places. You know, it says that during the 3 weeks are a time of Puranios, a time when many negative things have happened to the Jewish people throughout history, between Shavuos or Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. And therefore it says, since it's a negative time of the year, that's why we don't say Shechiyanu. You want to say Shechiyanu v'kimanu, and Avol, a mourner, is allowed to say Shechiyanu. In fact, when a person's Rechmano Litzlan parent dies, and he gets a Yerusha, he makes a Hatov HaMeitiv, or a Shechiyanu, after the Dino Emes. So it's not because we're mourning that we don't say Shechiyanu, it's because the time is a time that is very negative, and you don't want to say, thank God for bringing me to this time. You want to say about this time in the year that it's something you're happy you came to this time. That's why you don't say Shechiyanu, not because we're mourning. Because mourners can say Shechiyanu. It's nothing to do with mourning, it has to do with the time of the year. So therefore, it says that therefore people should not hit their children or hit their students during this time, since it's a dangerous time. Person should try not to do things that are negative. There are exceptions to that, right? And the kind of hitting that a person should do anyway, sometimes during 3 weeks, is also necessary. But that's what it says. I was thinking, therefore,
this is our lecture that says there's only one animal in the whole entire world that we pride to the donkey. It's amazing.
Okay.
Only the donkey that would put jewelry down and everything else. We give him a pigeon,
Okay.
Okay. Is there such a...
Yes. The Torah says it, that you uphold the opinion. Okay, in any case, but let's get back to the thing. In any case, what I want to say is the following. Therefore, if hitting people during this time is an inopportune time, then it would follow that being negative and criticizing people during this time is also not positive, a positive thing. And sometimes we go to the extreme one way. And even though we said that really there has to be a balance, you have to be critical. On the other hand, you have to have the other eye that is knows how to see it in a positive, constructive way. But sometimes if you go to the extreme, and unfortunately, most people, right, one way or another, have gone to the extreme of being critical, either in their personal lives, of other people, of their rabbonim, of their parents, of their children, of their spouse, right, of whatever it may be, of the shiurim they go to, right? So they're overly critical. So the Rambam says that when you go to one extreme, in order to get back to the middle, you have to go back to the other extreme. So I don't think it would hurt too much if during the 3 weeks people are mekabel on themselves, b'li neder, not to be critical at all. Not to criticize anything for 3 weeks, right? Just like you're careful not to hit your children or your students for 3 weeks, even though during the rest of the year it is a positive thing sometimes to hit your children, unlike modern education that says that chas v'shalom never should hit a child or whatever, or never criticize a child. Just, if the kid, murdered his brother, you say, well, what do we think about that? How do we feel about that? You don't want to criticize him or anything. There is a time to hit a child, to criticize a child, or whatever. However, like we said, sometimes you have to go to the other extreme to get back to the middle. I think it would be a good thing and a very positive thing if people were mekabel on themselves for 3 weeks, till Tisha B'Av, not to be critical at all. And then once you've gone and swung the pendulum to one extreme, you can go back to the middle and then know how to criticize properly. And if we do that, then in Yirtzeh Hashem, we will be zoche to the brachas that Bilam gave us. Matovu Alecha Yaakov, Mishkinosecha Yisrael, be zoche in our personal lives, in our communal lives, to be the kind of people who can be critical, but critical in a positive way, and then we'll be zochet the Rabbanu Shlom, even if he's critical of us, is critical in a positive way, and in that way, Yemir Tzashem will be able to see the ultimate bracha that Bilam gave, right? Dorach kochav mi Yaakov, that one day a star will shoot out of Yaakov, v'kom shevet mi Yisrael, when the Mashiach will come soon in our days. Amen.